Hi there and welcome along to this racing postcast. It is Monday the 2nd of August. I'm Maddie Plell and this week's guests we have Lee Mottershead and James Stevens, both who were keeping a close eye on the fantastic action last week. Coming up, we're going to look back on a stellar, glorious Goodwood and Galway. We're going to talk about that briefly as well. But first, we're going to talk about some of the big talking points from the last 7 days or so. Firstly, I want to touch upon something that you alluded to in your Monday column, Lee, and that was the atmosphere at Goodwood and what you think it means for racing fans going forward. Just shed some light on how you found Goodwood over the past week and what you sort of uncovered.
Well, I suppose in terms of what I found, Maddie, it's slightly difficult for me because as the press, we spend most of our time at any race course in the press room. And particularly at Goodwood, you're in an elevated press room above a betting hall. And you don't really see a huge amount apart from when you're going to the winner's enclosure to get quotes. So you don't really get the whole race goer experience. But the experience for some race goers, particularly on Friday, was definitely very disagreeable. A fight broke out before the final race on Friday. I spoke to bookmaker Beau Brown of West End Racing, who had a vantage point of everything that went on, pretty much to surmise it. Four guys started laying into two other guys, then two guys joined the four guys, so it was 6-on-2. A scrap ensued there in front of the grandstands. That then concluded. The two guys who'd been sort of bashed around managed to get up and brush themselves down. Then one of the six guys was stood by Beau's betting pitch, to which another guy approached him and said, "That was brave of you, 6-on-2. And the guy who said that got punched very hard indeed, landed on the tarmac with his head making contact with the tarmac. There was a lot of blood. Beau and other people who were on the scene said it took a long time, or too long in their opinion, for security to get there and for medics and the police to get there. In the end, the guy for some reason didn't want to press charges after he got up and recovered. I suppose that's entirely his decision, but the culprit was arrested and a case will go on from there. It's not the first time an incident has happened at Goodwood. This certainly wasn't the worst. 3 years ago, 9 people ended up getting prison sentences after a mass brawl at the race course. We've seen similar disturbances at Newbury in the not too distant past at all. And I think I just reference this in my column on Monday. And, you know, some columns connect with people, some don't. This one has had an awful lot of feedback, with many other people expressing their concern at the atmosphere on race courses, particularly on days with big crowds at those summer flat festivals. People greatly concerned about alcohol consumption, greatly concerned about drug taking on the race course and in the race course toilets, even though there are sniffer dogs at big race courses now, including at Goodwood on Saturday. They're adamant it carries on. I've had people talking to me about days on other race courses where they have found the atmosphere unacceptable. And of course, the danger is not only is a lot of the behaviour that's going on illegal and very concerning, but it will alienate that audience within horse racing that goes racing to watch racing. The great thing about racing in many ways is that you can go to have a day at the races and have no interest in racing and still enjoy yourself. That's a marvellous thing. But if some people are going to behave badly, either intentionally or as it happens just because of the amount they drink or substances they take, then that is going to be very negative for horse racing.
And you've been in racing longer than James and I have. Is this something that we've spoke about, how it seems to become more of a thing in the last couple of years? Do you think that rings true? Do you think it's a societal change, or is it simply now we're seeing it with our eyes on social media, etc., more?
I think it's probably a bit of both, Maddie. I mean, certainly people have responded to the column today by saying that this has gone on for a long time and they've been unhappy with the atmosphere on race courses for a long time. But I do think it's increased in recent years. I think that's possibly linked to the fact that the use of drugs and cocaine in particular has expanded in society in recent years. It seems to be very readily available. And the stigma attached to it doesn't seem to be what it once used to be. We've all seen things like the behaviour at the Euros of English football supporters. That is an example, I think, of a societal problem. And there's no reason why
racing necessarily.
No, and there's no reason why racing wouldn't reflect wider societal problems. But I think if that problem moves into horse racing, then horse racing does have a problem. There are lots of arenas in which people go have a good time and drink. They don't all seem to have a problem with people fighting, with excessive drinking and with drug taking. Racing doesn't want to be seen as that sort of arena. And I think there's a danger if we get many more repeats of incidents like we had on Friday, that will be the case.
And just quickly, what can be done about this? Is it with the race course? Is it their responsibility to, you know, make more deterrence, to up their security? You said the response on Friday wasn't particularly quick.
Well, that was certainly the view of people on the scene. I think you're right, Matt. I think ultimately race courses have to police this harder. Now, that will involve more money needing to be spent, on a police presence on race courses and in security. And also security needs to be meaningful security. Again, Beau Brown, the bookmaker at the scene on Friday, referred to a lot of the security people there looking like they're either 15 years old or 60 years old. Now, that's not going to deter a lot of people. So I think we need to have a bigger, better security presence on race course. That might mean more people patrolling toilets on race courses as well. It'll mean more sniffer dogs, and it's going to mean more money needing to be spent. Now, some race courses won't like that, because obviously you don't want a race course to look like it is setting itself up for trouble, as if it's expecting problems, because that might impact on the atmosphere. But against that, I think people who are going racing, and the vast majority do go racing to have a good time and to behave responsibly and to watch horse racing, those people will need to feel that they are in a safe environment. And looking at the response to the column today, I think there are a significant number of people who no longer feel that, which is really worrying.
It's worrying, and it's very sad. James, just our final point on this, you've covered lots of big meetings like Lee, but also you're a regular at lots of smaller tracks. Is this something you see on not the massive days as well, or do you think it is more restricted to those big events?
No, I certainly don't think it's restricted to big events. I feel that the crowds can often come for the big sort of music nights, which we've got so used to seeing on the race courses, and they're very important to them as well. I mean, I grew up in Newbury, and a lot of people would never talk about the super sprint, but they would talk about who was performing that night. So the people who would sort of be attracted to those meetings may not go to, say, an evening meeting on a Thursday when there's no music. I think I agree with a lot of what Lee says, and I think a lot of it comes down to how it is policed, and also sort of understanding what sort of problems could occur. You know, you need to be clever about it. You don't need to put in hundreds and hundreds of members of police and security for a Tuesday afternoon at a meeting that's not going to get many people, but knowing the crowd and knowing a big crowd's going to come, and sort of understanding the audience and understanding who's going to be there because of who's performing, I suppose, or what crowds you would usually get. I mean, when you buy a ticket now, you put in so many details. I'm sure they know the sort of average, how young people are going, or where people are coming from, whether they're sort of, you know, they understand what sort of demographic they're appealing to, and it's working that out and trying to best evolve. I mean, Goodwood had this problem not too long ago. You know, you've got to ask the question of them, how has this happened again? I mean, I always go back to the idea that if you see a big police presence, it is a massive deterrent. You know, if you go to a nightclub and there's big bouncers outside, you're not thinking about having a fight because they scare you. So it's just understanding it and being a bit more clever. And as we say, this is not what we want to happen on race courses. Race courses are meant to be inclusive. They want everyone to be there. Racing's a sport where we see all sorts of people go racing, and you don't necessarily see that at football or other venues. Racing has to celebrate that and really do its best to support it, because it's one of the biggest appeals that this sport has over any other.
Okay. Something else you touched upon in your column, Lee, was the Racing League, which got underway last week. Quick thoughts, good or bad, or somewhere in between?
I think it's a work in progress. I think what they've got this year isn't how it ought to be in the future. I think there are clearly frustrations among those trainers who can't take part. Now, there's a lot of us said in the column, he said, she said, about these invitations that were sent via the National Trainers Federation, sometimes saying they didn't receive anything. Whatever happened there, it remains the case that if they have 12 teams of four trainers, which will be their maximum at the moment, that would exclude the vast majority of trainers who couldn't take part in these £50,000 handicaps. That's a problem. I think in specifically about the racing league, Maddie, it's never going to suit me. You know, the idea of a 6-week team competition with teams constructed from nowhere doesn't excite me. I don't care who wins. And I think most people would find it hard to care who wins because we've got no emotional attachment to the teams involved. The idea of being on a race course with a DJ pumping out tunes during the evening, again, does nothing for me. That would more put me off than make me want to go. So the racing league isn't for me, but it's not aimed at me. You know, Piers Morgan and GB News aren't aimed at me, but some people love them. So although it's not my thing and it isn't going to be my thing, if they can find a way of incorporating all trainers and making it a more open and accessible competition, there will be a lot of people who do enjoy it. And if they can bring a new audience, a new responsible, well-behaved audience to racing, that would be a good thing. We're not all going to like the same things. You know, that's absolutely fine. There's no reason why I should like everything in horse racing. There's no reason why I should like everything that you like, and vice versa. If people like it, and if it works, and if it brings new money into the sport, then that would be a really positive thing.
It would indeed. Now, I'm going to move us swiftly on because we have lots to recap. The next talking point does lend itself to talking about one of the races too, though. But just quickly, James, let's talk about Battash, because he was retired after racing in the King George Stakes last week. Arguably one of the greatest sprinters we've ever seen. His impact really was that huge. And he graced the racetrack for the final time last week for Charles Hills and Jim Crowley. A magnificent horse. How do you sum up everything that he's done for the sprinting division over the last couple of years?
Yeah, a lovely, lovely horse, and an incredible story really as well, and that we've seen him come back year after year. We've had the luxury almost of Stradivarius, him and Abel coming back year after year, which we sadly don't see as much as we'd like on the flat. But he's a horse, I suppose, the story with him, and there was Bob as well, and you sort of got to know him. They were like friends, you know. It's like the old jump horses that we talk about. They come back year after year, but Battash every year would just... He was brilliant, you know. He was, I think there's something about raw speed, which is just really incredible to watch, you know, a horse just accelerating away. And you certainly don't get that with some of those jumpers that we like, Maddie. But Battash certainly had, he had that electric ability. You know, he had that bit of quirk about him. You know, we love the Frankels, the horses who are just excellent. But then we also like these sort of horses where you're not quite sure what they're going to do there, but a little bit of an enigma. And Battash was that. But on his day, he was brilliant. And that's what got you excited. Were we going to see that Battash? And I think everyone's got a favourite moment of his career. I mean, I remember watching him win in France, the Abbey. I think that was his three-year-old year. I mean, I was actually watching an American football game at Wembley. I remember watching it on my phone, just thinking, blimey, this horse is something else, you know. And everyone's got a moment, and that's why we love these horses, because we all remember something distinct about them, and I certainly remember him winning in France that day.
It will be a long time before we find a horse as talented as him over that 5 furlongs, won't it? And so many other good sprinters that he beat and that he raced against as well, the likes of Lady Aurelia, Blue Point, Harry Angel. It was a good couple of years for sprinting, from the minimum distance to towards the maximum then. And let's look back on Tuesday's Al-Shakab Goodwood Cup. There was a withdrawal with Stradivarius taken out of the race by John and Thady Gosden. That left the way for Trushan to win, the 6-5 favourite. He was keen in the early stages, but ultimately very convincing to be away he goes. And Sir Ron Priestley, who finished lame. This was a big victory for Holly Doyle and also for Alan King, who continues to do so well with his flat string. Lee, where does Trusham rank among the stayers now? Because it seems this ground is important to him.
Well, that's right. And I think wherever he ranks with a qualification in the sense that connections are adamant he is at his best on that sort of ground. And it's a sort of ground that the Stradivarius camp don't want, which is why we didn't see Stradivarius in the race. And that'll mean matchups going forward could be difficult, because obviously we get to Champions Day again, that's likely to be ground that's much more in Trusham's favour than Stradivarius. That said, he's clearly on this ground a very good horse. And, you know, to an extent, not just on this ground, on our figures, on Racing Post ratings, he actually ran to a £2 higher mark and the same mark he ran at on Champions Day last year when he ran sixth in the Northumberland Plate under a welterweight. He's a really smart, likeable stayer. He's been trained extremely well by Alan King, who we all know is, we've known him predominantly as a jumps trainer. He's now very much dual purpose. And ironically, his best flat horse needs jumps ground, seeming to show his best form on turf. I thought it was an excellent effort. It was a funny sort of Goodwood Cup in the end. Obviously, Paul Sir Ron Priestley suffered what might well have been a career-ending injury in the race. Aidan O'Brien's two Derby winners from last season, Serpentine and Santiago, they really haven't progressed at all. And whereas Adair has magnificently flown the flag for the Derby this year, Serpentine very much hasn't from last season. The second horse away we go, Trouble like the winner for a lot of the contest, looked like to cause or looked set to cause a big shock. He eventually faded and looked set to be one of the few European participants in the Melbourne Cup this year. Trusham is a smashing horse. Hopefully he'll get his ground somewhere else again this season. And he'll be he'll be extremely hard to beat when he does get his ground. He was the highlight of, I thought, what was, generally speaking, a disappointing opening day at Goodwood. Kinross's Lennox Stakes. Kinross was a good performance, but that was a so-so Lennox Stakes. A two-year-old race, the Vintage Stakes was seriously far from vintage. Trusham definitely the star on that card with Holly Don Allen King.
In comparison, the Sussex Stakes on Wednesday was an absolute cracker, and some three-year-old fillies in there, which is quite rare recently for this race anyway. I've been doing some research this morning, and Alcohol-Free Julie became the first three-year-old filly to win since Marling in 1992, I believe. So it's been a long time. James, this horse is just exceptionally talented. She's very fast, but also she's now settling well enough to run over a mile, and she's versatile too. She just seems to have everything you want in a top three-year-old.
Yeah, she does. And you say versatile, I mean, you can extend that to ground, and I suppose the connections will have to sort of think about trip now as well, because she certainly looks like she could get a bit further. They think she is. I mean, when she was beaten in the Falmer Stakes, I thought maybe they might think about dropping her to seven, because she obviously won the trial at over seven furlongs at the start of the season.
It's funny you say that, because among her entries, she's got the Sprint Cup and the Judmont International. So you could either go up to a mile and two and a half, an extra half a furlong, or back down to six. So that just illustrates how unique she is, I suppose. Mm.
Agreed. And I mean, if I had her, I mean, I'd be very happy now for sure. But I would certainly be looking at the mile distance and sticking around it. I mean, the way she finishes off her races, I mean, Poetic Flair, I mean, blimey, what a horse he is. I mean, to be on the go as long as he is, to I mean, I know he didn't win on Wednesday, and I know he didn't win the Irish 2000 Guineas on pretty heavy ground, or indeed in the French equivalent. He has gone on the go and still ran his race every single time we've seen him. I mean, he's been very busy. He's always running to a very high level. And I think that we'll look back at the end of the season and go, well, we knew Alcohol Free was good because she beat him. And he's been incredible this season. I mean, with her, I mean, she's going to go far against the girls. I mean, when you've beaten the boys, as you say, it takes a lot. It shows a real distinct quality that she has. And blimey, where she goes next, we don't know. But I'd stick with a mile to her. And Snow Lantern, I'd go the other way. I'd definitely go up to a mile too. I mean, I know she didn't sort of have a run of a race, but I thought she ran well. But I think those three horses are real exceptional three-year-olds. And to be honest, a Bar Palace pair, we know what he is and we know how good he is. I think they're going to take a lot of beating wherever those three go.
just having a look at alcohol free, interestingly, as short as 8-1, as big as 16-1 for that Judmont International. Just one of many options for her. Goodwood really was host to many magnificent fillies over the last week, and one was Lady Beaufort on Thursday. Lee, many people's highlight providing Kieran Schumark with the first Group 1 win, and the same for her trainer, William Jarvis, for almost three decades. I think this was probably the highlight for you as well, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, absolutely. I think this stood apart from everything else in terms of the week. There were a lot of feel-good stories, and, you know, Alcohol Free and Trushan were feel-good stories. But I think this was on the next level, really, because the people involved are extremely popular, and for good reason. The owner, Emma Banks, is a super lady. She is a huge fan of horse racing. She's extremely engaging and has been tremendously loyal to the people around her who haven't let her down. Kieran Schumark, the jockey, we all know his backstory because he's spoken about his backstory. He has been exceptionally frank and candid in talking about his addiction issues in the past. He's fought back from that, and by being so frank and candid, he's almost certainly helped many people who are in similar situations. So he deserved his first Group One. And William Jarvis, as you say, Maddie, three decades. I remember back in 1994, Grand Lodge, he was a super miler for William Jarvis. He was a Group One winner. You might have thought that would send a career going in one direction. Doesn't always happen. And for William, over the years that have followed, generally speaking, he's not had the horses that his talent would suggest he should have had. And that's the case for a lot of trainers, a lot of jockeys. They don't get the chances they necessarily deserve. But he showed with Lady Beaufort what he can do when he gets a good horse. He was in tears after the Lady Beaufort was unlucky in the foal mistakes last time. This time, he got his victory. He was congratulated by, it seemed, everybody on Goodwood Racecourse on Thursday. There was genuine delight for him. And I think the horse is seriously good. You know, she has now amassed a CV this season that is of extremely high order. She won a Group Two at Newmarket in May. Since then, she's been second to Palace Pier and a Lockinge, second at Royal Ascot, probably below par that day. But then she's run fourth in the Falmouth, first in the Nassau. We now know she stays a mile and a quarter. In fact, she saw that out really, really well. So lots of options for Lady Beaufort. Going forward, and she definitely has the ability to win more Group One races, and if she does, we'll be celebrating again.
We will, and I think the reason people resonate so much with her story is because, as you say, it's about overcoming adversity. She was unlucky in a couple of Group Ones. She's been plucked from not total obscurity, but it's not the usual faces associated with her, and that's always refreshing, and it you know, engages people. So fingers crossed, whether it's the Brujon Romane, which has been mentioned, or even targets further abroad for Lady Beaufort next, we'll see her again in the winner's enclosure soon. We're going to have a quick pause now, but don't go anywhere, because we're going to actually talk about one of the most exciting horses in training just after this.
Racing Post Members Club is the only subscription that includes access to the Racing Post digital newspaper every day from 9 p.m. plus exclusive premium content, including expert tips, analysis, form study tools, and more. As a listener of the Postcast, you can enter the code POSTCAST21, that's POSTCAST21, to get 50% off your first 3 months. Head to racingpost.com, click on subscribe, and choose Get Ultimate Monthly to get started. That's code POSTCAST21.
That horse I mentioned ran and won the Thoroughbred Stakes on Friday. His name, Baid, the new superstar potentially for the miling division. And as we've alluded to, it's already very strong. This horse in, again, Hamdan Al-Maktoum's silks, the Shadwell Estate colours, was super impressive and extended his unbeaten record, beating a smart field here with consummate ease. James, how do you compare what he's done to what the likes of Lady Beaufort, Alcohol Free, Poetic Flair have done?
Yeah, it's interesting to see that the Racing Post ratings marked him 124, which says he's an outright Group One performer. I sort of was clearly very impressed by him, but I wouldn't say that just yet, because I always think you sort of want to test a horse in that sort of division to try it. But the way he travelled through the race, the way he moved through the race, the way he quickened, you know, it's really exciting stuff. And it's almost sort of funny, isn't it, that the connections, they sort of wave farewell to Batash and suddenly Baid explodes onto the scene. You know, it's racing's got a funny way of working out sometimes. I mean, I wasn't sure how strong a Group 3 race that was. I know there was a lot of familiar names in there, but I had a couple of doubts about this and that. I thought he'd win, and he won as well as I thought he would. So I'm not sort of surprised about the manner in which he won, because if you go back through his form, that's exactly what he was doing. And you could argue that the race he won at Newmarket, the listed race, had some very good horses in behind there who Maximal and One Ruler, they were horses that would be Group 3 horses, and they probably will go up into a higher grade. Very, very impressive, but we've got to go and see him do it again. Of course, we know how strong the Mileing division is with those three-year-olds we've mentioned. I'd be interested to see when they decide to step him up in trip. I mean, he's related to Hookham, who was, I think at this point last season, had won at Glorious Goodwood and was going to go off to the St. Ledger as a pretty short price. And his dam was a pretty good horse as well, won over 1/2, 1/3. So where this horse goes will be interesting, whether they decide to step him up this season or whether they wait for next season, because it's interesting to see William Haggis didn't mention that after the race. I'm sure Lee was there listening to him, but I got the sense listening to him that he was thinking maybe this is one for next season. Maybe that's the year we give him big targets. But either way, he is, as you say, one of the most exciting horses in training. And what is clear is it's going to take a good one to beat him.
It is. William Haggis, he often has that patient approach with his horses. Lee, the way he talks about Baid, do you think he really thinks that much of him? Because it seems like he wants to go relatively slowly with him. We have to remember he only made his debut in June.
No, I'm certain that William Haggis thinks this is an exceptionally special colt. And I think reading what Angus Gold has said since Goodwood about the horse, I think they all believe they are in the company of a really special thoroughbred. He has the wow factor about him, the way he cruised into the lead at Goodwood on Friday and then drew clear with Jim Crowley having to do very little, means he absolutely has to be a Group One horse. The ratings that he's achieved show you that he's a Group One horse. In many ways, he's the most exciting horse around at the moment, certainly because I think we just have no idea how good he can be. The horses who've been winning Group Ones, some of them are real superstars, but they don't necessarily look like they could be horses to rank with some of the greats in their divisions of previous years. I mean, Baid just could be anything at this stage. I mean, it might well be that he is a horse who peaks in the mid-120s, and he's no better than that, but he looks like he could be more than that. I think they'll stick to him well this season. The QE2 is the obvious aim towards the back end of the season. It sounds as though they're now umming and ahhing between the Prix de Moulin at Longchamp and the Celebration Mile. The difference is the Moulin is a Group 1, the Celebration Mile is a Group 2. They don't really need to be running Baid in a Group 2 now. They know he's a Group 1 horse. They sound keenest on the Moulin, and it will be fascinating to see what he does in a Group 1. And it'll be fascinating to see how fast he goes when he actually is put under maximum pressure.
Some horses find lots under pressure, some don't. And that's what's so exciting about Baid, because we don't know how much there is left under that bonnet, really, do we? Especially, as James has said, his pedigree suggests that he'll be a strong finisher, given that Hookham has form over 1.5 miles and beyond. Struggling to find lots of different prices for Baid, but I know after the race, 5-2 was quoted for the QE2. Very short indeed, shows just how impressed so many were. And from one exciting horse to another, the King George Stakes, although Batash was disappointing, Sueza broke onto the scene, beaten in the Commonwealth Cup last time, but she made amends dropping back down to a fast 5 furlongs here. And in no certain terms either, really impressive in victory. Lee, what do you think this means for the 5 furlong division, in particularly looking at races like the Nunthorpe and the Prix de l'Abbé next?
Well, I think that what it tells us is that Sueza is the dominant force over five furlongs at the moment. We knew she was a good horse beforehand. Her racing had primarily been over six furlongs this season in France. She disappointed at Royal Ascot when things didn't play out for her in the Commonwealth Cup. I'm backing out the day and really fancying her. She started favourite. But she went to another level here, even on a French previous PB form. She's improved a stone from what she'd done at Chantilly to Goodwood. I thought she was stunningly impressive. And I think it was a very deep King George Stakes. It was a Group 2 race that you could easily have called a Group 1. You had a Abbe winner there, Glass Slippers. You had Dragon Symbol, Arachiba. Obviously, Batash didn't run his race, but it was packed deep with quality. We know in terms of that five furlong division that we've now lost Batash, who's been retired, as we were talking about earlier on. Oxted, who won the King Stand, isn't going to be around for the rest of this season. So in some ways, the way is clear. And having run to 1.26 RPR at Goodwood, in some ways, even in the way wasn't clear, Sueza would be the one to beat. The Abbe for her will be the obvious target. She loves soft ground and it's on a home soil. Whether or not she goes to the Nunthorpe before that will be interesting. The Abbe is the one that Connections will be aiming at most, I think, and understandably so, and she'll be very hard to beat. France, as a nation, hasn't really been associated with sprinters greatly in recent decades. That's always, I think, pretty much been the case. You look at most Abbeys and they tend to be packed deep with British and Irish horses and very few French horses. But in Sueza, they now have the season star sprinter.
And owned by a man who's put so much into flat racing over the years in George Strawbridge, trained by Francis Rohu. Let's give you some prices for that Nunthorpe then, because Sueza could take it in en route to the Abbey. She's the best price, 3-1. Golden Pal, Wesley Ward's horse, who's now owned by Coolmore at 7-2. Batasha's been taken out of the market. Dragon Symbol, Winter Power are both at 6-1, and Glass Slippers as big as 9-1. You'd expect she'd come forward plenty from that run at Goodwood. Now, James, what did you think of Sueza? Do you think she can really stamp her class on this division?
You'd have to say so. I agree with Lee. I thought it was a really strong race, and I think that Glass Slippers and both Dragon Symbol really ran their races, and I think that's probably as good as they are, and that's no disrespect to them, but she was just in a different league to them. Regarding the Nunthorpe, I think Connections will be looking at that and going, yeah, we've got to take it in. We've got to go for it. You know, it's going to be so tempting with her now, because she's one of those horses whereby she obviously disappointed at Royal Ascot. She's come back with this massive bang and everyone just wants to know, well, can she do it again? Can she do it again? And I think Connections will be feeling that as well. You know, there's a sense of excitement about this horse, as much as we said about Baid. I know this horse has been beaten and, you know, it hasn't got the flawless record and perhaps isn't going to go to the extreme level that he might. But there is a sense that this is a really exciting sprinter. And just again, as Lee sort of mentioned, the division isn't that strong at the moment, you know.
What about ground? What if it turned up fast at York? Do you think that could inconvenience her? Because I think the worst she's raced on is good to soft.
I think so, but the thing is with some of these sprinters is that sometimes the ground just, you can sort of think about it, you can play in your mind a bit, but she is going to be one that, you know, they've sort of mentioned it as well and such. I mean, you'd want to try her on it. She's not run on anything like that. I mean, she probably wouldn't suit it as well as the others, but it's going to come down to whether she's still got the class to perform on that sort of ground. I mean, we won't know that until we try. I mean, the Connections will probably have an idea, but, you know, it's easy to sort of worry and overthink things like that. But when you've got the best horse in a division, I'm in the camp where if you've got the best horse in the division, the race is right, the horse is right, go for it, you know. I think we worry so much. I mean, if the ground's rattling quick and they know she's not going to handle it, then they probably won't run it. But she looks in a different league, and it might be that the factors of a race might draw the others closer to her. But to me, she just looks far better. And as we said, with Oxted, she's beaten two of the best horses over five furlongs, maybe Dragon Symbol or six, to be honest. But she's beaten two of them already and quite conclusively. So, you know, she's going to take a lot of beating on that evidence if she can do it again, especially given what happened on Friday.
Talking about ground then, it seems a key factor for sure to Wonderful tonight, and that filly won the Lily Langtree on Saturday. Did she enhance her arc claims, Lee? The market suggests not particularly. A lot of the bookmakers kept her at the same price.
Yeah, and I think to be fair, Maddie, there wasn't really much she could do to enhance her arc claims in a race restricted to fillies and mares over a mile and six. That, you know, in that sense, it wasn't an obvious trial for the arc. It wasn't a race that she really could do much in which you'd say she could enhance her arc credential. She could have made them look weaker had she underperformed, had she been beaten. As it was, what we saw, I think, was a perfectly pleasing display. She was keen for much of the race, which certainly wouldn't have been in her favour. And she was ridden out to win, but I thought she won with tons in hand. There were some people questioning afterwards, saying, well, arc winners don't run over this sort of distance before the arc, but that's not entirely true. David Munizier, the trainer, worked for Cricket Head, who sent out Gold River to win the arc, having run over further. Marion Barr with Horse, who ran over further. This won't negate from her arc chances. I like you, Matt, I know you're a huge fan, so am I. I fell in love with her at Royal Ascot when she won the Hardwick Stakes. I think if we get a proper soft ground Prix de l'Arc de Triomphe, as we often do, she will be hard to beat. I think she's improving all the time, and I think on soft ground, she has a major say in the arc. I've backed Adair for the arc after his King George success. I think he is the one to beat, I believe. And the reason I haven't backed Wonderful tonight for the arc yet is that her chance will be, I think, not so much dependent on the ground, but influenced by the ground. We know how good she's on soft ground. If they happen to get a good ground arc or a ground on the quick side of good, then her chance is clearly compromised relative to other horses. But I think if they get her ground at Longchamp on the first Sunday in October, she really is a major player and more than worthy of the 8-1 quote she's got.
Yeah, as you say, 8-1. Generally interesting. William Buick was saying to David Munizier after the race, don't run her over this trip again because you have to break her stride in those early stages. Such an enthusiastic horse. She looked $1 million, didn't she, beforehand? So we'll wait and see where she goes next. I think she has the Yorkshire Oaks and other races like Prix Vermeil in her sights.
And Maddie, if I can just qualify something I said Gold River was trained by Cricket Head. It was actually Alec Head, Cricket's father, but the Head family.
We'll forgive you for that one, Lee.
You're very kind.
Now, onwards to the Unibet Stewards Cup, the handicap feature of the entire meeting. It was won by a really progressive horse in Comanche Falls for Michael Dodds under Connor Beasley. It was the trainer's first win in the race. He does excel with sprinters. You can name so many of them who have succeeded for him at Group 1 level in recent years. Could this horse be quite up to that, James? Because he's certainly going in the right direction.
Yeah, it's always difficult to sort of judge. I find it quite difficult to judge handicappers going into sort of better grades. I mean, sometimes I think they're not going to be good enough and they go and win. And then anyway, that's just the struggles of my punting. No, I thought it was a good performance from this horse. I thought he's clearly sort of improved. And as we see with so many sprinters, just time after time, they get that win. It's just sense of just keep rolling them out. And Michael Dodds just does so well with this type of horse. You know, he's an excellent trainer with these. And when they just start performing, they just continue to roll. And I mean, this horse, I was looking at him, is 8 from 16, which is pretty incredible record considering this is a sort of handicapper. I thought it was quite a strong Stewards' Cup. I don't think it was the strongest, but I thought it was still pretty decent. There were a lot in there. The horse that I will personally be taking out the race was Great Ambassador, who was third. I quite like Ed Walker's sprinters, and that's before the time of Starman. I always thought this kind of improve, and he normally targets races quite well, especially big sort of handicaps with a good bit of prize money at Ascot and such like that. And I thought this is a classic Saturday horse in waiting. You know, he's gonna win one day. He ran a well enough race. There were a couple of excuses, and you just feel if a race was shaped in a different way, he might well have won it. So he's definitely a horse to follow, but I just fear that that's a bit of an obvious one and the price won't be as nice as I'd like it to be.
Right. It might have forced their hands somewhat with a couple of those raising their marks. Maybe they'll have to go for listed race, etc. Next, it'd be interesting to see. Now, some quick fire questions before we look ahead to the action this week and indeed this weekend. In a couple of words, please, gents, top two-year-old performance of the week, Lee?
Top two-year-old performance of the week. I thought Armour in the Molcombe Stakes was impressive, Maddie. The danger is that we won't see Armour much next season. Rich Tannen referred to as a horse for this year. And of course, we have seen two-year-olds, including trained from the Hannon stable, who were retired at the end of their two-year-old season. But I thought he looked good. And I would also say I thought the first and second from the Maiden on Saturday, Imperial Fighter and Ring of Bear, Ring of Barra, that they impressed by the way they travelled and the way they then went on. And I suspect that both those will be in stakes races before the season's out.
Over to you, James.
Yep, I would agree that the best performance this week was Armour. But yes, as Lee says, he does look a bit of a two-year-old and sort of looks the sort of horse that might run quite a few times this season and go off for a future sort of career. I mean, there's one I quite liked, was really impressed by away from Goodwood. Royal Patronage for Mark Johnson was down at Epsom. I don't know why, but every time I see a 7 furlong novice or maiden at Epsom, Mark Johnson seems to win it. This horse looked really, really well, and he just sort of powered away. It was quite impressive. And I was looking through the form behind him. He'd actually ran pretty well behind Native Trail, who, of course, won a Newmarket in the July meeting. So the form works out well. He's going to get a mark now. He's going to be quite improving, but he's more of a sort of lesser known name that perhaps is one for the trackers, because he looks like a horse who could go and Patton Company next.
You guys are definitely using more than a couple of words, but I'm certainly grateful, because I'll be rushing to see that replay after this podcast has ended. Top handicap performance of the week, whether that be winner or for the tracker, Lee?
I'll be sort of governed by head and heart in this one, Maddie. Calling the Wind, trained by Richard Hughes, to win the Goodwood Stakes on Friday. Richard, I used to work with for years, doing a Racing Post column and his autobiography. He was the master of Goodwood as a jockey. He hadn't trained a winner here at the Glorious Meeting as a trainer. He has now with Calling the Wind, and the way the horse again travelled to the race suggests that the Cesaro Rich is a more than justifiable target.
James?
I thought the most impressive winner was Kadar in the handicap, one of the first races earlier this week, and a horse that might be worth following was Aswan, who won the nursery. Nice form behind him, and like I say, I think he's a two-year-old that might improve.
And I did promise you in the intro to this show we would touch upon Galway. The time for that is now. Who was your best performance from Galway? I'll let you go first this time, James. Did you catch much of it?
Bits and pieces. I mean, it sounds very boring, but Saldia I thought was absolutely outstanding. It was a funny old week to watch, but mighty impressive. I wasn't expecting it, and it was very, very impressive. That's the one that stands out for me.
Yeah, certainly. He's proved he's up to grade one level in the winter months, hasn't he, Saldia? So hopefully we'll see more from him, Lee.
The horse right behind him, Maddie, Milkwood. The only horse I backed at Galway last week was Milkwood in the Galway Hurdle. And I think for a long way, I thought I might well be collecting. Really goes ever so easy through a race. We'd seen that in the past at Cheltenham in the County Hurdle and then in the Scottish Champion Hurdle. Arguably didn't get the smoothest run in the closing stages, but that was still a big effort. And I think that Neil Mulholland can win another decent pot with Milkwood.
Fantastic. Coming up this weekend, we've got the Shergar Cup, and we've also got the second day of the Racing League. So eyes will be on those competitions this week. Have you got any naps for us, gentlemen? Where have you been looking at, James?
So RFO West Country Tipping is not very good this week because there's no jump racing. So I've been back to Bath. Me and Lee went to Bath the other week.
We did.
Lee's onions, I don't believe he was to scratch. I'm not sure if it was you or Lewis, but there was onion debacle anyway.
Raw, for fried.
Yes, exactly. Hey,
Maddie, you're a foodie, Maddie. You don't have raw onions with a hot dog, do you? You surely want fried onions with your sausage in a bap.
Do you know what? I can see the angle for raw onions in maybe salads or in something. But yeah, if you're having a hot dog, I think it's got to be fried.
Thank you. Sorry, James, carry on.
Anyway, James, take it away, Bath.
There are more important things than onions cooking.
Well, you might say that, James, but if I'm having a hot dog, the onions are the most important thing.
Well, the most important thing, Lee, is the Sky Sports Racing HD Virgin Handicap, which I hope will be won by my boy Charles, who was pretty good last time out, and hopefully dropped a mile suit.
Perfect segue. Lee, are you going back to Bath or are you going somewhere else?
I'm going to name one at Newmarket for you on Friday evening, Maddie, the 6:38, the Rich Energy Powering You Handicap. It's over a mile and a half. Top horse in the weights is Zabeel Champion, trained by Mark Johnson. Already got William Buick jocked up, so it looks like the horse will run. It's pretty straightforward, this. It's a Mark Johnson trained horse at Newmarket, and this horse has run three times at Newmarket in his career. Every one of those wins has resulted in a victory. One of them came on the July course, and I still think the horse is probably fairly handicapped off a rating of 104. So Zabeel Champion, Newmarket on Friday.
Thank you very much, both of you. Thoroughly enjoyable podcast talking about Goodwood, the racing league, race courses and everything in between. Hope you have a fantastic week. Thanks for joining us, and do the same in 7 days' time.